I always like to know what is being said about me, and my French is very poor. Although I learnt French at school for 6 years, I thought I did not know very much French at all because I was taught so badly. But I was explaining to two ladies from Brittany on the way here that I learnt to sail in Brittany, in Quiberon. And all the instruction was in French. And I was amazed because when we were out in a storm and the instructor was shouting at me in French, I understood what he was saying. And I realized that maybe the French I was taught in school wasn't so terrible, because in an emergency, I could recover some of it, right? But I think this is a reciprocal, it was a reciprocal thing. Because I think there was some English taught in the schools in France that was not very good either. That is when I was younger. Because I had a young man living in my house over the summer vacation, and he had been given some work by his English teacher at school in France. And the work he was given was to translate the complete works of George Bernard Shaw. Now, can you imagine a young man learning English being given a summer vacation task of translating the complete works of George Bernard Shaw? So I think that probably on both sides of the English Channel, the teaching of one another's languages has never been very good. And so, as you will know, I am not an expert in modern foreign language teaching. Although I have been involved in supporting many teachers doing research into modern foreign language teaching in England. And one of the things that happened in England was large numbers of students became disaffected from learning in this particular area of the curriculum. It was notorious for alienating about two-thirds of the nation's children from education. And some years ago, not so long ago, in about 10 years ago, the Secretary of State for Education in England, who is now a visiting professor in my university, a man called Charles Clark, Charles said, "Let us not insist on teaching modern foreign languages in secondary education in England. Let us start way down in early childhood in the primary school." He said that 10 years ago, and still, in many of our primary schools, we do not have good teaching of modern foreign languages, including French. So it is an ongoing problem in the British context. I don't know about the English context. Now, I'd better get on with my talk, because as my wife is always telling me, I spend at least 15 minutes on the context so that I never then have time, if you like, to complete what I was going to say. She's also always telling me not to use PowerPoint. So I am obeying her this morning, even though she's not here, because she says I prepare, say, 12, 15 PowerPoints, and I get through two, And then I forget that I have the PowerPoint on, and I never get through the other 12. So it is best if I don't use PowerPoint at all. So forgive me if you are a PowerPoint addict, because I'm afraid I have never learnt the art of presenting a PowerPoint at the same time in a way that is compatible, if you like, with my personality. Okay, so that's enough. Now, teachers as researcher. Now, the paper that my talk this morning is based on was a paper I specially wrote for a keynote symposium only 2 months ago at the British Education Research Association. And this keynote symposium was on the work of a well-known curriculum and pedagogical theorist called Lawrence Stenhouse. And Lawrence Stenhouse died in 1982. So 30 years ago. But some of you here will know of his work. Very often, his work is no longer remembered in Britain and in the United Kingdom. But when I go to Taiwan and Hong Kong and even the United States of America, I find people are still using his work. Some 30 years after he died. So he is an educational thinker whose work has globalized well beyond the place of its origins. but the one thing he will be well known for is the idea of the teacher as a researcher. Most people, when they come across the idea of the teacher as a researcher, will think of Lawrence Stenhouse. Now, we published a book, which I co-edited with a colleague of mine, Nigel Norris, early this year, on the work of Lawrence Stenhouse, and it is published by Routledge. And so we had a keynote symposium in which contributors to that book talked about the relevance of Stenhouse's work in largely in the English policy context today. Now, there are certain things I want to say about, or I should say something of a personal nature, because Stenhouse's famous curriculum development project was called the Humanities Project. It was funded by the Schools Council for Curriculum Reform and Examinations in the United Kingdom, a body that no longer exists. And the year was 1967, when this project, big national project, on teaching controversial issues in schools began. And I was a teacher in a secondary school, and I was head of a faculty called the Humanities. And I and my colleagues in the school had started to reform the humanities curriculum in the school. And this was school-based curriculum reform was then emerging in the 1960s. So we are talking about 50 years ago in the United Kingdom, school-based curriculum reform was emerging in a big way. And this was because something like 3/4 of the nation's children were being given a curriculum that had basically been designed for an elite. So in the United Kingdom 50 years ago, teachers were engaged in trying to redesign the curriculum for a mass system of education that was more socially inclusive than the system that we had then, where children who passed a test called the 11 plus at the age of 11 went into the elite grammar schools, and I was one of them. And those that failed went into a secondary modern school for what were called the average and below average academic ability children. And my brother was one of those. So what happened is, although my brother and I have remained on very friendly terms, his life took a different trajectory to mine. Here I end up as a university professor. My brother ends up as a gardener. Not that there is anything bad about gardening, but he is an intelligent and interesting person who was denied the opportunities that I was given as a grammar school student who passed the 11 plus test. I was teaching in a secondary modern school for where the so-called average and below average ability children went. And so we were trying to redesign. We were doing it on a school-by-school basis, loosely coordinated by the school's Council for Curriculum Reform, that had projects to support teachers trying to redesign the curriculum. So it was a rather messy kind of business. But we were trying to redesign a curriculum that met the educational needs of the vast majority of children. In the school I taught in, we didn't subscribe to a strict division between an academic education for the bright and able children and a vocational education and a practical education for the not so bright. We didn't subscribe to this view. We subscribe to the view that all children ought to have an intellectually challenging education. So the problem was, how do you design a curriculum and link that curriculum to a pedagogy that gave the majority of children access to knowledge, forms of knowledge and understanding that were only available to an elite? So that was at the heart of the teachers as researchers movement, that teachers could not redesign a meaningful and relevant curriculum and pedagogically engage children in it in a challenging and motivating way. They could not do this. This could not be done unless teachers were at the heart of the educational research process. Unless teachers in some way began to control, and I use the word control, what counts as valid educational knowledge about practice in classrooms and schools? Now, That was at the heart of the Humanities Curriculum Project, which was about redesigning the humanities curriculum as resources to enable children. I shouldn't say children because we didn't call them children. They became young adults because we were dealing with 14 to 16 year old students in schools. So it was, how do you design a humanities curriculum that gives these young adults resources to deepen and develop their understanding of the nature and structure of controversial issues in our society? That was what the project was about. And in that context, Stenhouse's vision was that that problem had to be shared with teachers, and teachers had to be put in the role of collaborating researchers with experts like Stenhouse himself, curriculum experts and pedagogical experts from the university. They had to be doing genuine collaborative research on that issue. But Stenhouse also had a wider view, which is not just that the notion of the teacher as a researcher was relevant to teaching controversial value issues in schools, but it was also relevant in all areas of knowledge and understanding, because his view of knowledge and understanding was that knowledge was a resource to enable people to think about the situations of everyday life. In this way, he was very, very similar to John Dewey. People misunderstand John Dewey very often because they think that he was all so child-centered, he had no time, if you like, for the disciplines, the role of the disciplines in education. But anybody who reads Democracy in Education would know that that is a total distortion of Dewey's ideas. The pedagogical problem for Dewey was, how do you enable students to use the knowledge and understanding that is encapsulated in the organized disciplines and subjects? How do you get children to use that as a resource for their thinking about their experience of life? So the pedagogue's job was to create that bridge between the experience of the learner and the best that had ever been thought and said and was encapsulated in the disciplines of knowledge and understanding. So that was very similar to Stenhouse's thinking, where knowledge was conceived as an object of speculative thought. Knowledge was not seen as abstract, concrete sets of facts that could be instilled in children independently of understanding how those facts and how that knowledge was actually constructed in the processes of research and scholarship. Now, in the UK policy context at the moment, we have a Secretary of State who is saying that we must now have an English baccalaureate, right? And that baccalaureate will not include the arts. It will not include the cultural subjects. It will include only knowledge. Now, what a primitive view of knowledge this Secretary of State has, all right? That somehow or other, the arts, the humanities, the cultural subjects, right, are not resources to enable people to think about the world of human experience. Somehow or other, they are relegated into the domain of subjectivity. And knowledge is mathematics, is science, or is language, and is geography and history. Although in the English baccalaureate, the students have to choose between geography or history. Now, Stenhouse had a much broader view of knowledge than this. It included the humanities because he saw the humanities as a systematic study of human values. This is why the humanities are relevant, as the humanities disciplines are relevant to exploring controversial value issues in our society. But he had a broader view of knowledge. Sorry, he had a broader view of the curriculum as even subjects like mathematics and history and geography and science, where knowledge was treated as provisional, open to revision, open to reconstruction in the light of further processes of inquiry. So knowledge generally was seen as a resource for thinking about human experience, for speculative thought. And it was not seen as immutable, fixed sets of information organized in categories that we call subjects. So the idea of the teacher as researcher, of how you construct a curriculum that engages students in using knowledge as a resource for thinking about their experience, this could not be done without teachers playing a very central generative role and being engaged in systematic inquiry. So, curriculum experts in the university, pedagogical experts in the university, from Stenhouse's point of view, were to be involved in a genuine collaborative research. He said to teachers, if a curriculum expert from the university comes to you in your school and says to you, implement this curriculum, it is very good, or adopt this pedagogy, it is very good, tell that expert to go back to the university, right? And tell him to redesign their ideas in a form that gives you, the teacher, some hypothesis for you to test and experiment with in your classroom. So get them to see you, the teachers, in your classrooms as experimenters who are testing hypotheses and reconstructing those ideas that may be introduced by the university curriculum expert, by the pedagogical scientist, But the teachers are engaged in the systematic production of curriculum and pedagogical knowledge. This was Stenhouse's view. Now, if you look at what has happened with the idea of the teacher as a researcher today, I would say, where is the pedagogical knowledge that teachers as researchers have actually produced? Now, in my twilight years, as they say, having spent how long? Almost 50 years trying to work with teachers to produce a bodies of pedagogical knowledge about how to teach in certain areas of the curriculum, about how to teach well, to engage children in meaningful learning. And I consider that I have been involved in projects where teachers have generated that knowledge, and yet most of it, although it is published, has been long forgotten. So at the end of the humanities project, which I worked on with Stenhouse, we produced a lot of pedagogical knowledge about how to teach controversial issues in classrooms. We systematically generated that knowledge in the form of general hypotheses, in which teachers did comparative case study. They compared and they contrasted their experience of trying to realize certain values and principles in practice. They generated these hypotheses, they were published, and they were ignored. They were ignored. Today, teacher research is considered, even governments, certainly the British government, encourages teacher research. But it isn't teacher research that generates systematically knowledge. Because teacher research is considered to be small-scale research that individual teachers carry out in their own classrooms and is very good for their professional development, for their learning, but isn't science. It isn't science. So, what is entrenched? I think, I don't know about continental Europe, you can tell me, but certainly what is entrenched in Anglo-US, North American ideas about teacher research is a professional culture of individualism. Dan Lauty wrote that beautiful book in, oh God, someone here could probably tell me how long ago it was, but it was about the culture of teaching. And he argued that teaching will never be a profession all the time. It is dominated by an individualistic culture. Professional culture, where teachers do not go into the teacher's room and talk about the problems of classroom practice together, but where they go and they might talk about what they did at the weekend, whether they went sailing or didn't go sailing, whether they played golf and so on and so forth, but they did not generally talk about pedagogical problems. So, what has happened to teacher research? One of the things that has happened is it's been, if you like, shaped largely by a professional culture that is highly individualistic. And this has been reinforced by the universities in the United Kingdom, where teachers can go and do master's degrees. And they can do research in their own classrooms and schools for their master's degrees. They can even do part-time PhDs. Researching their classrooms. And maybe they involve colleagues and peers in some discussion about their research, but they are the originators of the knowledge that is examined. And you see, this knowledge, when I say to teachers, look at the thesis you have written and look at the references, and how much have you cited the research of other teachers in your references? Or have you cited John Eliot on action research? Do you know what I mean? Or some academic. And you look at the references, and they are all references to the work of academics. Right, thanks. They're all references to the work of academics and not to teachers. So we still do not have any tradition of professional scholarship and research where teachers, if you like, are building on the knowledge and understanding that they have developed, that have been developed by other teachers, and in which they are now treating that knowledge as a set of hypotheses for them to test out in their classrooms and in their schools. I've been told I've got 5 minutes, and I've probably got 4 minutes now. But one of the things that has happened in the universities that has, in the United Kingdom, has supported teacher research, although individualized it in the process, it's also methodologized it. What I mean by methodologized is that there is supposed to be a set of research methods and techniques that teachers can use that will guarantee, if you like, that they have access to truth. That they have access to truth. Now, Stenhouse, the original idea of the teacher as a researcher was much more within the sort of pragmatist tradition of John Dewey. And as we know, logical at all, because he was a pragmatist. And his conception of truth was, well, if that the knowledge and understanding that we generate works practically for us and gives us a better grip on human problems and situations, then that is good enough for now. That is warranted. I think Dewey called it warranted a certain ability. Now, what has happened to teacher research? It's become methodologized so that we judge teachers' research not on terms of its knowledge and understanding outcomes. We judge it in terms of whether it has incorporated methodological rigor, as that is understood by university academics. And this is another way in which the Stenhouse idea of the teacher as researcher has become sort of distorted. Okay, I'm really going to wind up now with a final comment. And that is, you can't keep good ideas down. They will surface somewhere or other in the globe. And what happened to me was I sort of, because I worked a lot in Hong Kong, supporting teacher research in Hong Kong, I discovered collaborative kinds of research in which teachers together worked at pedagogical problems together with university academics It was a movement that spread from Japan to the United States of America into Hong Kong after one of the PISA results showed how high Japan had come out in the international comparisons, right? Now, I'm very skeptical about these kinds of things, but the kinds of things that has emerged under the rubric of lesson studies that is now rapidly globalizing throughout the world, even spreading into Europe, approximate very, very closely to the kinds of philosophical pragmatism that underpinned Lawrence Stenhouse's notion of the teacher as researcher. And one of the things we are trying to do now through the globalization of lesson studies is to work with teachers to systematically construct knowledge about those objects of learning that teachers find it incredibly difficult to teach. So, for example, I have discovered that in mathematics, the concept of division is notoriously difficult for teachers across countries, across the globe to teach. And now we have teachers working together, not only within their schools, but within their districts, within their countries, and across countries, to explore how can we, if you like, begin to resolve some of what I heard one Chinese teacher talk about, the big dragon. The big dragon. Let me put to you, finally, another big dragon that teachers do not know how to teach well and that is becoming absolutely crucial that they should teach well, and that is the concept of climate change. Right? This is a complex object of learning. Teachers rush into it with great enthusiasm. You will find on syllabuses and curricula climate change. You'll usually find it in science or in geography. But climate change is an interdisciplinary topic. It involves issues of values. Therefore, the humanities is relevant to teaching the concept of climate change. It's a controversial issue. Right? We do not have a set of aims and principles for organizing content that is relevant to teaching climate change. And one of the big contributions that Stenhouse gave us with the idea of the teacher as researcher was that you have to make explicit in any curriculum area, a set of pedagogical aims that provide criteria for a worthwhile educational process. And you have to translate those aims into pedagogical principles. And then the teacher's research is about how do we realize those principles in the particular context of practice in which we work. Now, he called that the process model of curriculum development. We are dominated in the Western world and more globally by an outcomes-based objectives model, which, according to Stenhouse, only distorts the nature of knowledge and understanding that we are trying to teach. So, thanks very much.